Blog Talk Radio.
Of the Just the Freedom Show. I'm your darling and dashing host, Push Nevada, coming to you live from Tempe, Arizona. We're definitely going to get some new music for you one way or another. I really love that music, and thank you. I want to thank my producer, Leslie, just for that track. But I'm constantly trying to encourage her to get some Ivory Brothers or something like that. I don't know. But anyway, we've got a really special guest on the show today, Robert E. Seeley, is a member of the Garrett family, the historical Garrett family. The family lived in Upper Darby, Pennsylvania, and were strong abolitionists on the Underground Railroad movement. The most famous of the Garrett bunch was a fellow by the name of Thomas Garrett, who helped over 2,700 slaves to freedom in 1822. So Robert Seeley is definitely going to talk to us about that. He's a genealogist, also an author and a historian of the Garrett family, of course, and has lectured at many colleges, schools, churches, civic organizations, and just has been all around. He has even appeared on radio and TV. So he's going to talk to us a little bit more about that. Mr. Seeley, are you there?
I'm here.
Great. Well, you know, let me ask the question just to start it off for those that don't know. Who is Thomas Garrett?
Well, Thomas Garrett was born in Upper Darby. He was an abolitionist, and he went a step further. He was he broke the law. He was on the Underground Railroad. But Thomas was born August 21st of 1789 in Upper Darby, Pennsylvania. which borders, it's in Delaware County, Pennsylvania. It borders Philadelphia, the western part of Philadelphia. His parents were anti-slave people, Thomas Garrett Sr. and Sarah Price. He attended, he was Quaker, and he attended the Darby meeting with many other anti-slave families, like the Sellers and the Pennock family. And those families were involved with the Pennsylvania Anti-Slave Society. They were also involved with free produce to boycott goods made in the South. And they donated money for the cause of freedom. And they were also involved with the schools, African-American schools. Many of them were involved on the Underground Railroad. Thomas.
Okay, well, I want to back up for a minute, and I want to talk about, this is 1822, Thomas's moved his family to Delaware. What was life like for the Garrett and his family? What was going on?
Well, let me just back up, push just a little bit, because in 1813, Thomas had a vision from God when a free woman that was employed by our Garrett family was captured by a slave catcher in Upper Darby, and she was taken to Philadelphia to be sold into slavery, and Thomas followed the wheel of the wagon. It's in Still's book, and we believe he was able to restore her freedom. But on that day, Thomas had a vision, as Paul had a vision on the road to Damascus. On that day, Thomas Garrett would dedicate his life to put an end to the horrors of slavery, and this would be God's will in Thomas Garrett's life, and he was unwavering in his commitment. And then, of course, he joined in 1818 the Pennsylvania Anti-Slave Society, which would be through legal means. But Thomas had other means which would break the law on the Underground Railroad. He moved to Wilmington in 1822, his young family. And, of course, Wilmington, Delaware, was a slave state. And he opened a hardware store right near his house, and he lived on Shipley Street in Wilmington, Delaware. And he would join the Wilmington Friends meeting there. He also joined in 1827 the Abolitionist Society in Delaware. And John Wales, who would later represent him in the trial in Newcastle, which I'll talk about later on, was also involved with the Abolitionist Society in Delaware. But his first wife, which was Mary Sharpless, died in 1827, and left him with five children. And mm-hmm. then he remarried Rachel Mendenhall in 1830, and they had one son. But Thomas would work with a lot of people in Delaware, people he could trust. One of them was Abraham Shad, Oliver Johnson, Henry Craig, a guy named John Hunn, who was tried with later on, Samuel Burris, who was African-American. He was a conductor. And there were many others throughout Delaware, in Dover, Camden, Middletown, all throughout Delaware.
Speaking of Burris and Hunn, what was Garrett's relationship with Samuel Burris and John Hunn and Harriet Tubman?
Oh, well, Samuel Burris, who was a conductor, he was African-American, he was free, but he was caught for helping some people to freedom. And I think the year, if I can recall, was around 1847, and he was put in jail for some months, and then he was put on trial and found guilty. He was put on the auction block to be sold back to be sold into slavery. Now, he was free. The Pennsylvania Anti-Slave Society, including Thomas Garrett, sent a gentleman by the name of Isaac Flint. And Isaac Flint was from the Wilmington Friends meeting, and he dressed as a slave owner or plantation owner. And they sent him to the auction block with abolitionist gold, and Isaac Flint brought the freedom of Samuel Burris. Samuel would never enter into Delaware again. He went into Philadelphia, and wind up in California. Samuel would also be involved in 1845 with the Hawkins family, which eventually Thomas Garrett was tried. See, in 1848, Thomas Garrett and John Hunn were caught for helping the Hawkins family to freedom. And John
What was the most severest sentence Thomas Garrett got for his abolitionist work?
Well, he was tried. This was when he was tried in 1848. He was tried by the judge was Roger B. Taney, who would later rule on the Dred Scott case. Are you familiar with Taney?
I'm familiar with the Dred Scott case. Yes. Go ahead.
All right. Well, he had the same judge, so I don't think he stood a chance. He and John. And he was fined $5,400 back in 1848. And it was real hardship on him. But it did not stop his Underground Railroad activity, because you remember in 1813 he had the vision from God to put an end to slavery, and this was his mission in life, is put an end to slavery. So it didn't stop him. By the time the Civil War broke out, he helped over 2,700 people, not property, to freedom on the Underground Railroad. Now, you want to ask about Harriet. Harriet stopped to see Thomas often. In fact, her parents were also Thomas helped out to freedom. She had a real trust in God on her many trips, and she would talk about God with Thomas, and I think they thought a lot alike about trust. But Harriet was also, besides helping many people to freedom, she'd go back into Maryland. She didn't have to go back, but she went back to help her family and friends. But a lot of people forget Harriet was also involved with the Civil War. She was a cook. She was a nurse. She was
a spy.
And she helped many to freedom during the time of the Civil War. So a lot of people say, well, she only helped this amount. Well, look at all the people she helped during the time of the Civil War. I have a letter here. And I'd like to read it because it talks about Harriet.
Great.
And let me just set it up just a little bit. I thought I'd get this out. I thought it would be interesting. Wilmington, Delaware is the northern part of Delaware, right close to the Pennsylvania border. And right over the line would be either Chester County or Delaware County. So Thomas would send many people, not property again, into Pennsylvania. This letter is dated 1854. It's right after Christmas, December 29, and it's to a esteemed friend, J. Miller McKim, who was on the Vigilance Committee in Philadelphia with William Still. Let me read it. We made arrangements last night and sent away Harriet Tubman with six men and one woman to Allen Agnew's. And Allen was just over the line in Pennsylvania to be forwarded across the country to the city, meaning Philadelphia. Harriet and one of the men had worn their slices off their feet, their soles off their feet. I gave them $2 to help put them out and directed a carriage to be lured at my expense to take them out, but do not know the expense yet. I now have two more from the lowest county of Maryland on the peninsula upward to 100 miles. I'll try to get one of our trusted colored men to take them tomorrow morning to the anti-slave office, meaning Philadelphia. You can then pass them on. So from one station to the other. There's many letters, especially in Still's book, William Still.
Besides Allen Agnew, was there any other, distinguished families, families with a little maybe power or money and persuasion that helped Thomas Garrett?
Yes. Thomas had many friends and family he would that he could trust. He sent many freedom seekers into Chester County, which I had mentioned, to the homes of like Isaac Mendenhall. Thomas Garrett married Rachel Mendenhall, and this would be his cousin. Now, some of the books say it's her brother, but it's really her cousin. I wrote a book on the genealogy of our family, and it's actually a cousin. There's the Bernard family out there in Chester County. John Cox, it was a cousin of Thomas's. His mother was a Garrett. And to the Price family out in Westchester. By the way, Abraham Shad had moved from Wilmington into Westchester, so he was also involved in Westchester, too. He would also send to his brothers. He had a brother, half-brother named Samuel, who lived in Upper Darby still. Philip, Edward moved into our original Riverview farm, and Isaac, he had a place by name of Fernland Farms. After their father died in 1839, the land was split in two. He also had a cousin living right near Upper Darby in Philadelphia. It was like a half a mile into Philadelphia from Upper Darby. His name was Samuel Rhodes, and you'll find that in William Still's book also.
Okay.
See, all these, you know, a lot of people in Upper Darby, Thomas knew because he spent his first 33 years in Upper Darby. Many freedom seekers had also traveled to Philadelphia, and I had mentioned William Still. And that book, by the way, that I mentioned that William wrote was in 1872.
Let me jump in here with a question. What other kind of efforts did Thomas Garrett take in his protest against slavery?
Well, I had mentioned he boycott goods made in the South. That's another way to fight slavery. But he would also write letters to newspapers. There was the Liberator was a newspaper put out by William Lloyd Garrison, and Thomas would write to the Liberator. Also, Frederick Douglass. He called his newspaper North Star. He'd also write to local newspapers in Delaware. He also sent petitions to the government signed by many of his friends. A group of friends, maybe 50 or 60 people, would get together, petitions to put an end to slavery. I think the first one he wrote was about 1827. And then in May of 1862, Thomas Garrett and a few of his friends at Longwood Progressive Meeting House, which is in Pennsylvania, met with President Lincoln. Did you know that?
No.
Concerning the drafting of the Emancipation Proclamation. It's kind of a hidden secret. A lot of people didn't know that. But he met with President Lincoln, and it was May of 1862. And then also he also believed, even though he was Quaker, towards the end that the Civil War was a way to end slavery. So there was different ways to put an end to slavery, and he was also involved. But he broke the law many times, and you know, when he was put in trial, his life was threatened many times, and the African American community in Wilmington, Delaware, a lot of times would surround his house to protect him, especially during the time of the Civil War.
What is there's something I believe it's on the Just the Freedom website, a slide perhaps of a carriage or a train. Is there a story behind that?
Carriage or a train?
Some kind of, or maybe perhaps you can talk about the Underground Railroad quilts.
The Underground push? I didn't hear you.
The quilt, an Underground Railroad quilt?
Well, a lot of times people had made quilts during the time of the Underground Railroad, and these quilts had messages on where to run for passengers on the way north to freedom. And that's what quilts were used.
As I understand, there are some perhaps historians who have denied the validity of the quilts, or many suggest that it's a myth. What do you think? Is it true? Is it fact?
Well, I don't have written proof, but I know that if people were walking down the street and they had a passenger, they might tug on their ear. They make signs. So, I wouldn't doubt that quilts were used, but I don't have written proof.
Okay. Cause, I think I've heard of that story. But I've heard many different interesting stories about how people communicated, particularly in the whole Underground Railroad movement, drums even, in the earlier movement. Drums were used as a speaking device, so to speak. But anyway, how can you're an author, and tell us a little bit about the books you've written.
I wrote a book back in 2006, Garrett Family, Upper Darby, Pennsylvania. It's a genealogy book with biographical sketches. It was used for research. The reason why I wrote it is because of family connections on the Underground Railroad. The question is, who can you trust? If you're caught, you could be put in jail. You could be sent into slavery. You can be fined very heavily. So you really had to put you had to know the people on the Underground Railroad.
Okay.
So I wrote this genealogy book because of that, and I found some of the family connections that Thomas used. It might be Price, and his mother's name was Price. So that's how you come up with Benjamin Price in Westchester. John Cox's mother was a Garrett. So doing the genealogy, it made connections on the Underground Railroad. And I think some of the other conductors and stations on the Underground Railroad had other family members. So if you went to the Gibbons family, if you went to Dr. Fussell, if you went to the Cox family, maybe they'd send them, the individuals or the family, to maybe their cousin's house or their brother's house. So I think that's important to do genealogy.
Yeah, what is your take on the carriage man jockey?
The carriage?
The carriage man jockey?
I don't understand.
The little jockey that people would put in front of their homes, the black jockey with the strap.
Oh, I remember seeing that back in the 50s. I know lanterns are used, and lanterns were put in the windows of the Cox family or Thomas's house, and it would direct people to a safe house on the Underground Railroad. I don't know about the jockey. Would you like me to tell of some of the escapes?
Yeah, great. Tell us a story of an escape story involving Thomas Garrett. Great.
Well, a lot of disguises were used on the Underground Railroad. We know the story of Box Brown, the escape in the Philadelphia. We know of the Kraft family who came from, I think it was Malcolm, Georgia, and dressed as a master and a servant on the way north of freedom. Frederick Douglass, of course, escaped, dressed in a sailor's uniform with sailor's papers, and that's how he made his way north. So disguises were used. There was a young lady, and this was passed down the family, that came to Thomas Garrett's house in Wilmington, Delaware, and she was followed by the owner, and a lot of times that happened. And she was outside of Thomas's house, and the owner was, and the constable. So Thomas had to figure a way to get her out of the house on the way north of freedom. So he sent her up to Rachel's room. Rachel was, of course, Thomas's wife, And Rachel dressed them in her attire, the bonnet, the veil, the long dress, the boots, the gloves. And she came down and took Thomas's arm, and they walked to the carriage. And they hopped in the carriage right past the master and right past the slave owner, and they hopped in the carriage on the way north to freedom. Another one, a lot of people say, well, how did he get a group of people on the way north to freedom? There's a story about a large number, maybe 12 to 15 people that came to Thomas's house. And remember, he owned a hardware store. So, first of all, a lot of times he gave them new clothes to wear. And then he would take them to, he took this group to his hardware store and gave them tools. And they looked like they were a work crew. And they walked up the street in Wilmington and then put the tools underneath a bridge. And then they make connections with another agent in Wilmington, Delaware, and they made their way into Pennsylvania. So he handled individuals or he handled groups of people.
Go ahead.
Yes, please.
I was wondering, how did Thomas Garrett die? How did he, what happened to the fella?
He died January 25th of 1871. And he lived to see God's will in his life fulfilled. This was his mission. He was fortunate to see the passage of the 13th Amendment, which put an end to slavery, the 14th and the 15th. The 15th, of course, was for voting. But before he died, the African-American churches in Wilmington, Delaware, gave Thomas Garrett a beautiful silver tea set. And I emailed that in, and you should have that on your webpage. And it was right after the 13th Amendment, and on the third anniversary of the Emancipation Proclamation. So it was January of 1866. And it read something like, to Thomas Garrett, through evil report and good report, thy wise counselor and faithful friend and generous benefactor of the wrong and oppressed, and it's signed from the colored people of Wilmington, Delaware. I put that on the website. At his funeral, 6 to 8, some people say 6, some people say 8, African-American men carried his body from his home, and it was up a steep hill in Wilmington, Delaware, to the meeting house. And many people lined the street to the full meeting house. The first speaker to stand up in that meeting house was Lucretia Mott. Her husband was James Mott. They lived in Philadelphia. And she talked about the inner light. That's what the Quakers believe, that God is the life of Thomas Garrett. And she was followed by William Howard Day and Aaron Powell. And he's buried at the meeting house. He's buried in the meeting house in Wilmington, Delaware, with his two wives. And he had a daughter, Sally. Well, his three daughters died before he did. Sally.
Did he die of old age? Did he die of old age?
Oh, no, kidney problems.
Kidney, okay.
Yeah.
You know, let me ask, what kind of books do you recommend for anyone interested in learning more about the Garrett history? Any particular books that you would recommend?
Well, The Underground Railroad by William Still was the first book out after, and that's firsthand accounts. I recommend that highly. It was printed in 1872, but you can't get a hold of it. But they did a reprint. So I recommend that highly. It talks about many agents, conductors, and it has many letters that Thomas wrote to William Still. There was a book by called Dear Friend by Judith Bentley. There was a book put out by a friend of mine who just passed away, James McGowan. I spoke at his funeral. The book is Station Master on the Underground Railroad, The Life and Letters of Thomas Garrett. and it was a revised copy. He came out with one a couple of years before, but that's Jim McGowan, heck of a nice guy, and he goes really thorough into Garrett's life and his relations with Harriet and William Still and many others. There's also a book, History of the Underground Railroad in Chester and Neighboring Counties in Pennsylvania, and that's written by a guy named Smedley. I think it's R.C. Smedley, if I can recall. Kate Clifford Larson wrote a book called Bound for the Promised Land. It's about Harriet Tubman, American hero. The Underground Railroad, there's another book put out by Wilbur H. Siebert, and that's The Underground Railroad from Slavery to Freedom. Those are the books, but I do want to add, there's a video out. It's called Whispers of Angels. I really recommend this. It's really neat. It's the story of the Underground Railroad, covering Thomas. And Thomas Garrett's played by Edward Asner, Mary Tyler Moore Show.
Edward Asner.
Yeah, and William Still's played by Blair Underwood. And it's narrated by my friend Jim McGowan. I don't know if a whole lot of people know about it. So that video is wonderful. I do want to recognize a couple people from. There's a lot of researchers in Delaware, the state of Delaware. There's a what is called the Underground Railroad Coalition. Debbie Martin, who's in Mayor Baker's office, is involved with the coalition. There's a Quaker Hill Historical Preservation Foundation. The president's Bayard Marin. Harriet Tubman Society, one of the early. The Underground Railroad wasn't talked about much, and there was a few people who came out early and talked about it. Vivian Abdul Arim, R-A-H-I-M. Vivian is wonderful with the Harriet Tubman Society, and we talked.
Mention that video again, too.
Oh, it's called Whispers of Angels.
Okay. Do you have a website?
Well, you can go. I don't have a website personally, although we just dedicated the National Park Service Underground Railroad Network to Freedom for Riverview Farm. And Riverview Farm is on with Sherry Jackson with National Park Service. And it's on, but it just started. So it's the website is actually just in the beginning stages. So I don't have an actual website. My email, if anyone wants to email, is Seeley, S-E-E-L-E-Y, 1022 at AOL.com. And they can email me. I get about 50 emails a day. So
great.
Just put Underground Railroad on it.
Okay. Great. Well, that's all the time we have. Thank you, Mr. Seeley, for being with us tonight. This is just a Freedom Show, Push Nevada, and we will see you next week, same time, same place. Good night, Mr. Seeley.
Good night, Push. Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Reach out and touch somebody's hand. Make this world better place if you can.